Doug McGregor, CEO for OCOC. This is Critical Insight. And today we have a couple of very important interviews for you about election integrity and security, because both are very important and, as we know, lacking across the country. So I urge you to listen to these two interviews. These are two people in the arena fighting the fight for all of us. There's nothing more important than the vote that we as United States citizens cast. Our guest today is Catherine Engelbrecht, who is the founder and president of True the Vote. And we're very happy to have her. Catherine, welcome. And
thank you so much.
Can you tell us right off the bat about True the Vote and why you ended up starting it?
Yeah, absolutely. I started True the Vote in 2009 entirely by accident. A small group of us had gone to work at the polls, and we just had heard that there was a need for volunteers. We never expected that it would be more than a one-day episode. But what happened that day at the polls really changed the arc of my life for, I mean, at least the next 15 years, as we know, since I'm sitting here with you today. What we saw at the polls, most of us had wonderful experiences, but there were about 20% or so that compared notes and found that there were some real breakdowns in process that couldn't be explained away. And so we endeavored to take a deeper look. We did our very first research project shortly thereafter, looking at the way that voters were being registered and added to the voter rolls in Harris County, Houston, Texas. And with that very first project, we made national news and got ourselves in the crosshairs of groups that didn't like us very much. That would have included at that point the Obama administration, and it has been a series of adventures ever since then.
Well, can you tell us what specifically caused you to take such dramatic action?
Sure. I mean, honestly, I didn't even recognize it at the time as something that would be considered dramatic. I just assumed it was common sense. When people were coming in to vote, this was prior to Texas having photo voter identification, so they were required to just show a registration card. And we saw people who would come in with more than one registration card, present one, and then be told that that card already indicates a vote had been cast. So they would pull another card and be told, oh, well, that one's fine, and go to vote. And when you see things like that, you clearly mm-hmm. know they're wrong, but what do you do? People that would come in and sort of sheepishly whisper, I don't remember who I'm supposed to vote for. And then the judge would take them to the voting booth, and you would hear them instruct the voter, not in how to vote, because assistance is fine, but who to vote for. And similar instances throughout the day. When you compare all of that and you realize this is what happens when people are actually there watching, being a part of the process, what happens when no one is there? And so we really believed that we thought, okay, let's just reverse engineer this from soup to nuts. How do names get added to the poll books, which ultimately go on to find their way to polling places and be just error riddled? How does that happen? And so that was our very first project. There'd been a group that had come to town by the name of Houston Votes that said they were going to register 100,000 new voters in a month or so, which belied anything we knew to be true about voter registration projects. So we did a deep dive on what they were submitting, found out that in fact they were submitting erroneous registrations, turned that over to the county. The county was thrilled because they had been, unbeknownst to us, under a consent decree that prevented them from looking at incoming registrations. And consent decrees exist to this day all over the country, hidden away in places and ways that change process out of the line of sight of the average activist or individual who's involved. So we didn't know that this was occurring. But when we presented this as a third party to the county, it gave them an opportunity to validate our work. That led to a press conference. And then 3 days later, that led to a mysterious fire and all of Harris County's election equipment, which 10,000 machines, $30 million worth of collateral equipment, all of that was burnt to the ground in a big warehouse fire. And that really is where, when I think back, that's sort of where the roller coaster left the station, because for us, all we thought was we were going to turn over this work product and that's going to be it. We'll wash our hands of it and move on. But suddenly it was like a dog whistle had been sounded. And, we were sued twice almost instantly. We had a gaggle of groups after us. The Obama administration's IRS was targeting us. And There's really been no looking back since. We've just continued to advance. And I can say now in retrospect, I really firmly believe that everything I've been through is about what's coming in these next few months. So all the lessons learned, all the hardening that's gone into this decade plus of work is about November 2024.
Well, you've obviously been involved in a lot of litigation. Do you have some feel for the level of success you've had or failure and why?
I think on balance, the big cases that we've been involved in, we've won. Case in point, I sued the IRS back in 2013 over their targeting of our organization and others. And we slugged it out in DC Circuit Court until 2019, when we finally got a favorable ruling. And only just, in fact, just a few weeks ago was the final sort of nail put into that case. And that's one example of just a long and hard fought battle for justice and making sure that we have case law that affirms that what happened to us, which in my case was 23 different audits or investigations by 5 different government agencies in 18 months, but that shouldn't happen. That's not normal. And so we were very fortunate to stay in the fight. But then there have been more recent victories, like our victory against Fairfight and Stacey Abrams and Mark Elias, in a battle that raged on for 3 years about voter challenges in Georgia. So yeah, I've never been out of court since starting True the Vote, and I've seen the decline of civility in the courts. Lawfare reigns supreme now as a tactic, and it's sad, but it's something that we have to anticipate. We're in several lawsuits right now, and it's not about justice. It's just about engineering a level of chaos that creates an unstable battlefield, and that's exactly what they want.
Well, you mentioned 2020, and or not 2020, but 2024, the future, the immediate future that lies in front of us. And there's something out there called Help America Verify Voters. Are you familiar with this?
Yes. Sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about it? Because a number of our members seem to be extraordinarily concerned about it.
Sure. So the Help America Verify Voters program was a program that came out of what was required by the Help America Vote Act. And it's done in concert with the Social Security Administration. And so the way this all sort of comes together is that when states are presented with voter registrations with no other identifying information other than the last 4 of a Social Security number, they will ask the Social Security Administration to run the background, if you will, of just ping that number and tell them whether or not it's a verified number. Of course, there's all manner of issues with that, because although we see non-citizens being given work permit numbers, and you would think, well, that could certainly be kept out of the sift of this kind of an effort where they're verifying numbers, but sadly, that's not the case. There aren't sufficient firewalls between citizens and non-citizens in this particular space. It's just not part of their plan. And so the reason that many people rightly were very concerned is that the HAVV was being published every week, the numbers of requests that various states were sending in, and the numbers were skyrocketing. In fact, in Texas, I think the number is like 1.4 million last 4 of social with no other identifying characteristics were checked by the Social Security Administration. And so that was all sent out. You clearly can see that there's got to be some nexus between the rise in those numbers and what's happening at the border. It was primarily affecting border states. But what was particularly curious is that, at least here in Texas, then it was almost immediate. The Secretary of State came out and said, no, that's misinformation. There have only been 53 some odd thousand requests. So, and then she went on to say, she put this out on a tweet, went on to say that they were working with Social Security Administration to figure out where this misinformation came from. Well, it came directly from the agency, who has, by the way, since stopped publicly releasing the data. Ever since it became put on the radar of social media, it stopped. So the transparency there is gone, but it leads to a lot of questions about just how vulnerable our roles are, which, frankly, is very vulnerable to non-citizen registration.
Well, supervisors of election have to sign documents that effectively affirm that the election was conducted properly it's a free and fair election, and they personally certify it. How can they possibly do that based on these numbers that are submitted that really can't be verified through the Social Security system? Because we think the Social Security Agency, as you point out, is in collusion with the entire border catastrophe. So these numbers are being passed out to people who are not citizens. So what sort of verification is that? It isn't any verification at all.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, this was set in motion back, I mean, just a quick trip down memory lane. Back in 1993, the National Voter Registration Act was passed. And at that point, social services were required. All social services were required to have as a component of their application voter registration. So that means the full complement of healthcare and food stamps and HUD housing and driver's license, everything that for Social Security, everything that performs a service has with it voter registration. And that was, you know, was sort of fine back in 1993 because it was only programs that were available for citizens. But then during the Obama administration, he broadened that to make those programs, many of them, attainable to non-citizens. And this is where the wheels start to come off because the technology, the process of making sure you had firewalled citizens and non-citizens, that never caught up. So now we are seeing, at the behest of the Biden administration through his 2021 executive order, this push for social service programs to make it a required effort to make sure they are upping voter registration numbers as much as possible, which is certainly not the priority of any social service program until now. And this then plays out at the border with NGOs that are registering non-citizens for all sorts of programs, giving them stipends for all manner of social service efforts. And with that comes voter registration. But it also gets to a wall where you can't see, there's such opacity, you can't see past what the states are really doing. States don't have access to validate citizenship as they should. So this is of great concern. Mm-hmm. And when you ask about how it's possible for our officials to sign on the line saying that they can certify the election, I can't explain it. I mean, I think back to 2020. As of March 1st, 2021, only 11 states had presented their fully audited or fully reconciled, I should say, data set of who actually voted in 2020. Not until March, and only 11 states at that point could accurately tell you, or within reasonable accuracy, tell you who had voted. So prior to that, what was that? Just a wing and a prayer? We've got our priorities and our processes so out of whack. There's so much lawlessness that's now baked in that the fraud has been institutionalized, and that's sadly where we are.
Well, we know that most state constitutions, when I say most, it's something in the range of 48, 47 states, actually have the requirement that if you're going to vote, you must be a citizen of the United States. But we really aren't in a position to verify that with absolute certainty. And I just had someone that reported to us that an NGO, non-governmental organization down in the Darien Gap called Maduros, was actually briefing people as they came through, telling them how they could acquire these numbers that you mentioned, and also telling them, by the way, make sure when you do vote, you vote for Biden. And if it's not Biden, then make sure you vote for the Democrats. And these people have no idea what you're talking about in many cases, but they all nod yes, and they say, okay, Biden, and I get number, and off they go. So this thing begins almost immediately upon arrival in Darien. I mean, how much worse could it get?
Oh, well, I'll give you a for instance. This is a card that could yet be played. So right now, the left is quick to say that, you know, non-citizens don't vote because it would be illegal. And we've already established that there's really no clear way to affirm the citizenship of those records that make up any given state's voter rolls, because the data is not sufficiently provided to states to make those determinations. So they're doing the best that they can, but it's woefully lacking. So we've created this engineered chaos, and we're moving now towards November. We know, as a practical matter, that these NGOs are as you accurately state, are prepping people coming across into the states that they should vote for Biden, which suggests they're referring to this November. So what other shoe might drop? Well, recently, Chuck Schumer and a cohort of Democrat senators wrote a multi-page letter to the president imploring him to please do something to pass a faster path to citizenship, that it was just essential for the country. I believe that plus his border bill and other such efforts, even though they do not have support even of Congress on this effort, I believe it could be setting a predicate for an executive order that Biden could pass affirming asylum and citizenship just prior to the election. Now, it would certainly be challenged in court, but it would cause sufficient chaos at the polls that would make it very difficult to separate, you know, good votes from bad or valid from invalid. I know that's an extreme, but, you know, in a time of war as we find ourselves, that is something that's within the purview of the president to do. And I believe it is a worst case scenario, but it is a scenario that we should take seriously.
Well, Catherine, what can we do? When you talk about the average American, we the people that are really American citizens, and we understand that effectively we're being disenfranchised.
That's right.
As a result of all this illegal voting. What can we do? How do we register our indignation? If we go to the polls and try to do it, it may not make any difference, is what you're warning. So what do we do right now?
Well, right now, what we're doing, and it's certainly something that anybody can do, but what we've tried to do is fashion this into a call to action. And if you go to our website, truthevote.org, and click on Engage, you'll see all the projects that we're working on. There's one called the 611 Project, and it deals specifically with this matter at hand of non-citizens voting and what can be done. We have a setup where you can immediately reach out to your local representatives, state and federal, and make sure that you are asking your state to publish what their process is for verifying citizenship. This is something that should be just a standard, you know, SOP. Just publish it so that we know what you're doing. We've actually tried to do this through Open Records and sadly came away very concerned that states didn't really have a process, but we're encouraging people to ask this themselves so that they are seeing it with their own eyes. Then we are encouraging that they reach out to their elected and demand accountability to prevent non-citizen voting up to the possibility of an executive order, just to be prepared. I think it's really important to start socializing these concepts so that we're not caught flat-footed if it happens. You know, we've seen some good things. In fact, last week, you know, the border bill, Schumer brought it back up again the second time this year. This time, more Democrats stood with Republicans than even the first time. They also voted to repeal non-citizens being able to vote in the District of Columbia, and 50-some Democrats stood with the Republicans in that effort as well. So we are seeing more Democrats cross the line to stand with Republicans to stop this. I think the more Americans know about it and talk about it, frankly, maybe the less likely it is to occur, because if enough Americans are saying, if this happens, you know, it won't happen on my watch, and that they intend to push back, elected leadership will listen to that. And how we get closer to it to solve it than that, I don't know, but we need to be aware, because you know, in my experience, I mean, we lived through COVID. We saw how that fog impacted our elections. And I think that the non-citizen issue is a similar type of fog that you know, can play out in many different ways in the coming months.
Well, it sounds like we confront a mountain of deceit that compares favorably with Mount Everest. And the government itself has been engaged in building up this mountain. So it's going to take us a long time to deal with this. Well, Catherine, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. We'll make sure that your message gets out. It'll certainly be posted on our net, but it'll eventually find its way onto YouTube. And we deeply appreciate you taking the time to visit with us today and share this information. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Colonel, for everything you're doing.
Sure. Joining me today as our guest is Jeff Bongiorno, who is running for Supervisor of Elections in Palm Beach County. And we're going to try and find out from Jeff how he decided to do this, why he decided to do it, and what this entails, because I don't think most Americans really understand the importance of being a supervisor of elections. So, Jeff.
Yeah, well, thanks for the intro. Thanks for having me, sir. I'm running for Palm Beach County Supervisor of Elections to restore truth, accountability, and transparency to our elections. It's been decades since we've had a transparent, fully certifiable election. And the people are not aware. I have my mission, my passion, and my skill set aligns with this position. I'm an IT expert. I have over 100 IT certifications. I've been in cybersecurity for over 20 years. And it's time to upgrade the skills of our supervisor of election. The current administration is a lawyer who's basically taking directives from the state and not following the letter of the law. And I believe the laws have been weakened to encourage illegals and non-citizens to vote. And it's something has to be done prior to the 2024 election.
Yeah, well, in that connection, we were talking earlier about something called Help America Verify Votes.
Vote, yes.
And you want to enlighten us as to what this act means and how it's going to be interpreted potentially and why it's so important for you to be the supervisor.
Yeah, well, you know, let me start by giving you a little background on my journey. I after the 2020 election, the alert red flags went up, and I used my skill set to help some of the state legislators do some comparative analysis. And it's just not simply believable. The numbers, the statistics don't line up. The Help America Verify Voters, it's part of Help America Vote Act. And this bill has basically provided a backdoor for illegals to register to vote. And what's really concerning is that recently we made an adjustment to our U.S. Code 611C3. It's Title 18 U.S. Code 611C3. And basically what it says, believe it or not, is that citizenship is a state of mind. And if an illegal alien reasonably believes that they have the right to vote, it's not a crime. So I don't know how you can judge a crime on the person's state of mind when they committed the crime.
Well, you know, one of the things that you pointed out to me earlier is that there are NGOs, non-governmental organizations, by the way, that are operating up and down the route from Darien all the way to the border. And one in particular you mentioned was Maduros. And that the illegals, if you will, or would-be illegals at that point, migrating north, are being instructed how they can get into the United States and ultimately vote. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, you know, this is a coup d'etat. This is treason. Our government's allowing it. They're using NGOs as their basic army, and our own taxpayer dollars are funding it. So you have what's even worse than the memo that Maduro handed out is the cell phone, and they're handed cell phones with apps with applications on it. One of them is called the CBP1 app, and that's Customs Border Patrol. And what it does is basically it's Expedia for illegals. It tells them where to go, whether it's Texas, whether it's Eagle Pass, whether it's Arizona, and it's a concierge where they have an appointment, and they're taking down their information of the illegal who's entering, and it's going into a federal database, which is very interesting, because there's a method to verify voters, part of the HAVV, what you mentioned, and this methodology is to use a four-digit code, the last four digits of a social security number, and you can register to vote. Now, there's no citizenship check, and there's no ID. So simply the feds, they receive data, transactions, and they pretty much approve. Yes, the person's deceased, or it's a good registration. The problem with that is at the local level, the position I'm running for, supervisor of elections in Palm Beach County, they're blindly accepting this registration. So there's no citizen check. This has been going on as far back as I can track is to 2011. And since 2011, there's been 1.2 million transactions only in Florida alone. Now, not everyone was approved, but the vast majority probably were. And you can also graph this out and you can see that certain states are under attack. Texas is under attack. Now, I put some information out on social media and it got retweeted and Elon Musk commented on it and there were 65 million views. And then President Trump and Mike Johnson held a press conference and they spoke about it. And then the House put forth a bill that, you know, we must have. And that's not going anywhere. But the problem with that is you can track Texas and you can see between so from 2022 to 2024, Texas added 1.4 million new voters. From I think it was 2018 to 2020, they only added 74,000. So the numbers are just not believable. Yeah, and the Secretary of State of Texas, Jay Nelson, she put out a memo, a press release, saying that the information on the internet is false, and the wording that she used was very suspect. She said, while Texans must show a photo ID to vote, while individuals can register and vote with a social security number, a 4-digit code. So I believe that those are very telling words.
Now, at the same time, isn't it fair to say that certainly Florida, I assume Texas, most other states stipulate that in order to vote in the state, you must be a United States citizen.
Yeah, well, that's Article 6, Section 2 of the Florida State Constitution, and there is a statute that states that. Here's how it works.
Before you go on, so effectively, the federal government is working to undermine enforcement of the law in terms of citizenship.
I believe 100%. They're orchestrating this invasion. Why wouldn't they?
So that means that these people walk into the United States, they get this number. When it comes to election day in November, they show up and they say, well, I don't have a photo ID for a driver's license, or I don't have another form of ID, but I have this number. And if you call a social security agency, they'll tell you, I'm good to go. Is that right?
Close. Here's how it works. So you can request a vote by mail ballot and only produce that 4-digit code. And in Florida, you can request up to 3, not just 1, 3. So here you have a nameless, faceless person who's only reduced to a 4-digit code who might not even ever see that ballot. In Florida, we have what's called third-party voter registration organizations. And it's very, so let's back up 1 second. So here you have a registration only using a 4-digit code. Now they enter into the voter registration book and they request a vote by mail ballot from the internet. They also send in the ballot and they write their 4-digit code down and they sign it. Mm-hmm. Now we know signature verification is very stringent. So this person, these voters are nameless and faceless. Now, what you mentioned was you made a great point. Well, I want to go to the poll. Guys like, you know, you and I and everyone in this room, we want to go vote in person, right? We're proud. We know we saw it. What happens? The first thing you walk in, they ask you for a photo ID. And I can't say, well, you know, can I get 2 more ballots for my friends in the car? Well, no, you can't. You can get 1. So I believe that the laws have been abridged to accommodate these, what the administration calls newcomers, to make it easier for them to register. But the most alarming thing is I believe that the third-party voter registration organizations, also known as NGOs, that's a Florida thing. Well, what do? The period closes where you can't register, and it's kind of like Antifa changes uniforms and they're Hamas, pro-Hamas. Well, what are they going to do? They're going to change their uniforms. They're not going to register voters. They're going to go around, and they're going to collect those ballots. And they have 10 days to turn in. So they have all the pedigree of the person that they're registering from the CBP 1-up and from the voter registration form. So now they have a 10-day period to put that in the database, whatever they want to do. So now they know where to get the votes from. So this is how the ballot harvesting schemes are orchestrated.
What can we do?
Well, so in Florida.
I mean, first of all, let's stop a second.
Yeah.
You know, when I say what can we do between now and November, there's not a heck of a lot that we can do, correct?
Oh, I have a very simple solution. And, you know, I know that the administrative state is not going to like this, but it's very simple. Mm-hmm. We wipe out every database, every voter registration database in the country, and everyone patriotically and peacefully, they go and they register, and they show photo ID and they show proof of citizenship, or else we're not going to have a fair election. That is the only way. That's their ammunition, the machines and everything else. That's the weaponry. But we could take the ammunition away from the bad actors by simply stating that our voter rolls are tainted. And if you're a supervisor of elections, if you're a certifying official, how can you certify that the election was legally run when you're violating? You don't know. You can't certify, right? Cert is the truth.
Well, listen, this is the critical question, because I agree with you. What you've outlined or stipulated is a great solution. It's desperately needed. In fact, I would argue that in-person voting is the only form of voting we should have, with the exception of people serving in the regular armed forces or activated from the reserve, serving in the regular armed forces overseas, who cannot come back and vote. That's it.
Well, you know,
now let me finish here. Yeah. But my concern, though, is you're supervisor of elections, and you're between now and election day, you're probably not going to have that action take place. We're not going to wipe out all these voter bases, although we should, and start from scratch. Instead, you're going to have to deal with the reality that you're getting votes that you can't verify from American citizens, especially absentee ballots. Correct?
That's correct.
So what do you do?
Well, this is a constitutional crisis. Mm-hmm. I believe there's no other alternative to have a true and fair election. And it has to go back to the elected officials who are certifying. They should speak up and say, I can't certify an election. I'm putting my name on it. And guess what? In Palm Beach County, they don't use wet ink. They stamp. There's a stamp. So, you know, this is a constitutional crisis. It should go to the governor. It should go to the governor of every state, because it's just not possible to have a fair election.
Well, in that connection, is it possible for Governor DeSantis to announce, I'm decreeing that we are going to re-register or register anew for the federal election in November? So everyone today who is a legal resident of Florida and is a U.S. citizen must go to their respective location, which you will be provided, and there you must register anew. And if you're not registered at this time, when you show up in November, you will not vote.
Hey, if the governor can
lock, do that,
if the governor can lock down the state of Florida for COVID, I'm sure he could do that.
Yeah, I think that's a critical point. Everybody needs to take that on board. If the governor of a state can lock everyone down or liberate everyone from confinement, he can damn well do this.
Well said.
Yeah. Okay. Well, continue now on this issue of truth, accountability, and transparency. Yeah. Obviously, that's embedded in everything you've said.
That's, well,
tell us what you want everybody to remember now at the end.
Yeah. Well, I'm running to fight for the people, to stand up for the people, to make sure that their civil rights aren't violated. And there's one way to do it. And this has been absent from our elections for decades. And I'm going to deliver truth, accountability, and transparency to the people of Palm Beach County. And I can tell you some truth right now that as a tech person, I did some research. It was very strange. I registered for a vote by mail ballot to see the process. And as soon as I registered, I received a response, a confirmation email, and it was from a company, an email domain called vrsystems.com. Mm-hmm. So I went in and I did a deep dive of their DNS. DNS controls traffic on the internet. It's a little technical. I don't want to go too deep into it, but it's very reliable, and you have to have, you can't hide your DNS. It's very difficult. And what I found was there's inextricable links to vrsystems.ru, Russia, vrsystems.cn, China, vrsystems in Finland, vrsystems in Chile, vrsystems in Denmark. So, and these are listed in their DNS hierarchy. So there's a connection. So why is a third party in Florida, VRS Systems, why are they maintaining our absentee, we call them vote by mail ballots. Why are they maintaining our vote by mail ballots? All you're doing is causing plausible deniability. You're allowing this to be offshored. And the other interesting thing is we're trusting technology, and we're trusting CISA. And CISA was the same agency, Chris Krebs, who gave us that the famous line, the 2020 election was the most secure election in U.S. history. It's a total lie. CISA is the, let's define CISA. It's the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. And they have basically commandeered, we federalized so much of our election laws where we've cut cookie cutter laws across most of our states. Why did, was it someone's great idea one morning to wake up and say, hey, let's everyone accept this four-digit code? 43 states do it. But we have CISA, and we have some new laws that were added to the books in 2019 in the U.S. It's called the .gov Act of 2019. And basically, it allowed CISA to become a, what's called a top-level domain registrar. And you, everyone might know that term from going to GoDaddy or Network Solutions, and you open a business, you want to have a domain with your name. Those are the, that's the company. That's what a top-level domain registrar does. But now CISA is in control of all of the .gov domains, which means they have access to the DNS root zone, which means they can basically go in and do anything. And but wait, there's more. Now, they're using Cloudflare as their DNS provider, which is another, you know, I'll say it, globalist organization. And it basically allows interconnectivity between domains with something called Warp Client. So they have this zero trust network architecture. I don't want to get too technical for the audience, but basically it's an S show and it needs to be stopped. So we can't trust the voter rolls. We can't trust CISA. We can't trust the machines. How can we trust our elections? Something has to be done like now.
Well, it sounds to me like somebody needs to get to the governor of Florida because he's probably our best shot.
Governor of Florida, governor of Texas. Yep. They're targeting Texas. Texas, believe it or not, in a week's period. So I did July. Okay. So the most volume was in the summer where they had 1.3 million half transactions in a 6 week period. And when, so we called this out to Jay Nelson, and what's very, so where we, I think our best evidence is, well, she wrote this press release and said, no, it's not true. This doesn't happen, but it does. It's on there. It's on the federal government site. So I went back and I got Greg Abbott's executive order to shut the state down for COVID. And I did the register and I checked that those have transactions, and guess what? They didn't slow down. So if the state's closed, if the idea behind a half transaction is someone comes to register to vote to, I believe it has to be in person, unless they're going to upload a photo. I don't know every state's regulations, but so who's processing these transactions when the federal government is pitching all this porn fear, right? Mm-hmm. You have the same amount of volume. And now I just checked, there was a primary in Texas. And by the way, that Dade Phelan, Texas should take a look at that race, because at 20% of the votes being counted, he had a tremendous lead. And this is something I experienced. I didn't mention that I ran for Congress last cycle. And what we noticed when we subpoenaed the cast vote records is that my opponent, Brian Mast, he received the first 50 sequential cast vote records in 12 out of 13 Palm Beach precincts. It's a mathematical impossibility. I came in second. There were four candidates. Before any of us got one vote, he got 50. And it's like an algorithm. So either it's electronic or it's ballot harvesting. So, you know, this is overwhelming. I know for the general public, and they're fighting inflation and they're working three jobs, but the people have to stand up, really. We need the people to stand up. So I'll give you another example of what's going on in Palm Beach County. We were in session, our state legislators were in session, and they were negotiating, debating, resign to run Bill 7050, which gave the governor the right to remain in as governor and run for federal office. And I had a scenario. I had an incident where I had a Haitian couple approach me, and they basically offered their services for a payment of $85,000. They would harvest. They didn't say use the word harvest, but they right. said, "We'll make sure you win. Red or blue, your money's green. So you pay us, we'll get you all the Haitian votes." So I texted a sitting state legislator, and I said that I was approached. You're negotiating this bill now. I was approached by, I told him the story, and his response was, "Yes, I know they do that. My relative was running for office, and she declined, and she got no Haitian vote and she lost. So I said, the only way to beat this is to go back to the day of voting. And he responded, well, that's the dream. But we're the people. So I got a phone call from this rep of the next day because I was texting him like, you wouldn't believe, because I'm a fighter and I'll fight for Palm Beach. And I said, well, we have to talk. And he told me, why don't you come up and talk to the governor? Because I was so irate. They were trying to do all this crazy hanky-panky stuff. They wanted to not have signature verification. They wanted to expand on that four-digit code. So you don't have to verify a signature as long as the code matched. So I was pretty much going ballistic on the state rep. And he said, well, come up on Thursday and I'll get you in front of the governor. Now, when I came up on Thursday, he was out of the country. He didn't vote on that bill. He missed the vote. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to give away too much, he wasn't around. And there's another incident where one of our great patriots, Erin, who's been lobbying these 39 municipalities, she went up to a state rep with about a 30-page report. And she said, these are all the irregularities. You know, the current incumbent, Wendy Link, she's not doing her job. You have to help us. And you know what he said? He said, Erin, you can give me all the evidence you want. I'm always going to side with Wendy.
Well, first of all, I think that we know that evidence alone doesn't make a great deal of difference to people that are in power. Because if it did, we'd have a very different government from the one that we have now. We can't fix everything between now and November, but we've got a couple of things that we can do, according to Jeff. And one is, you very definitely is to go to the governor of the state and get him to intervene and make the judgment that you've got to re-register or register new and clean up the voter rolls. I don't know if he's willing to do that, but he should be. He had the courage to stand up and extricate Florida from the COVID mess. I would think that he could certainly do this. Now, one last thing.
Yes.
Where can people go to find out all of this kind of information?
Okay. So to find out about me and my campaign, my website is votebongi.com. Now, there's another solution, which is a grand jury. And the website for the information, there's some great information on Florida. It's called The FloridaFix.com. And believe it or not, this is a very positive thing. We're almost 18 months ahead of the game because we have some great response. We have been successful in a statewide grand jury, and a lot of that evidence can now be used to get some local grand juries going. And as a supervisor of elections, a candidate and other candidates, you can join our fight. And we can lobby and we can start a grand jury and we can get this done. That could be the remedy. Wipe the voter rolls and everyone re-registers. I mean, the data is bad. This would not last in a business environment, right?
No, of course not. And we have to expect that the federal government really should involve itself and demand something very similar on a nationwide basis. But there's no evidence that that will happen because the system, as broken and corrupt as it is, works to their advantage.
Well, the people in power have changed the laws so they could stay in power.
Right.
So the people have to step up. We need grand juries. We need people to sign petitions endorsing grand juries. We need business owners, politicians, sheriffs to join this fight and get this done.
Okay. Well, Jeff, thanks for coming in today. I sincerely hope that you're successful. We don't have enough Jeff Bongiornos out there. We need about 10 versions of him right now here in Florida and probably 50,000 versions in the United States. So thanks very much for everything and all the best.
Thank you for your service.
Oh, sure. Well, that's the view from Our Country, Our Choice today. Thanks very much for watching. Join us soon for another episode of Critical Insight.